I started studying at Oak Hill Theological College 11 years ago. And I barely knew anybody when I went there. I knew two or three people, that's all, because I had previously done some Bible training with them in London, something called the Cornhill Training Course. And I can still remember meeting up with these two or three people on that very first afternoon when we had to go and register for the first time at Oak Hill. And these two or three people, they were very polite and they were very friendly, but they looked at me, and I hate to say it, but I'm pretty sure they were thinking, what's a person like you doing here? What in the world is a person like you doing training to be a vicar? Have you ever had that feeling? How did a person like you get that job? How did a person like you get in here? What's a person like you doing married to him? What's a person like you doing in church? What do you think you're doing trying to change your life, someone like you? Well, that is the question at the very heart of this passage in Luke this morning. Please do have it in front of you. I'm sorry, the printing hasn't come out brilliantly, but hopefully you can follow it. It's Good Friday. It's Good Friday. Jesus is being crucified. And we're told, okay, you're with me, that on either side of him there are two other men being executed, two criminals. We know from the other Gospels that they were robbers. And we know, don't we, that robbery is theft with violence. We're talking about two very, very bad men, one on either side of Jesus. And yet Jesus says to one of these two very, very bad men, today you will be with me in paradise. Now look, paradise is not in the sky. Paradise is nothing to do with bounty or Philadelphia cheese or young love. All right, don't think about those things. Paradise is God's people living under God's blessing forever and enjoying the good things that God has prepared for his people. That's what paradise is. It's forgiveness, it's eternal life, it's heaven. And this wretched, useless, God-forsaken criminal is going to be there. Jesus says he's going there. So how is that possible? How is that possible? Because if it's possible for him, it is possible for you and me. There are three words to take away. Realize, recognize, and remember. So let's look at the second reading, okay? Second reading, we're going to spend most of our time there. And look at verse 39. Right at the beginning of the second reading. One of the criminals who hung there hurled insults at Jesus. He said, aren't you the Messiah? Aren't you supposed to be God's son? Well, do something. Don't just lie there or hang there. Get down off that cross, save yourself and save us. It's very interesting. This man on the cross has never had any time for God his whole life. And yet when something goes badly wrong, who does he blame? God. Do you know anybody like that? Interesting, isn't it? He has no sorrow for what he's done. He takes no responsibility for what he's done. But the other criminal is different. The other criminal, he realizes he's a sinner. So verse 40, he rebukes the first guy. He says, don't you fear God? We're about to die. We're on the edge of eternity here. Don't you fear God? We are punished justly. We are getting what our deeds deserve. We are guilty. But this man has done nothing wrong. You see, on the other side of Jesus, there's a man who knows he's messed up. Here's a man who knows God is real, and he knows that he has offended him. In fact, this man knows he is God-forsaken. In the Old Testament, Under Jewish law, if you were hung on a cross, it meant you were under God's curse. And you could not be in a worse place than being under God's curse, because it meant you were completely separated from God. You see, this man hanging next to Jesus that day, he's under no illusion. When he dies, he's not going to rest in peace. He knows it. And yet, there is no complaint. He doesn't blame bad luck. He doesn't blame bad parents. He doesn't blame bad background. He just says, you know what, I did it. I'm up here getting what I deserve. But hang on a minute. Of course he deserves to be there. He's a robber. Yeah? What's this got to do with me? Because I don't think any of you are robbers, are you? Well, maybe I can illustrate it like this. I got an email from my sister the other day. She said this. I have been sorting out a collection of stringed instruments which have been sitting on top of a wardrobe for years. There is a very grotty Chinese violin and a Romanian viola, which is quite nice. I think the grotty violin is yours, Louis, but I'm not sure where the Romanian viola came from. Did you also play the viola in the distant past? Well, I've got to tell you, I was somewhat affronted by that email because I did play the viola and I thought I played it rather well. However, the truth was revealed to me when I left school and went to university. I auditioned for every orchestra in town and they all said, no thanks, you're rubbish. Every one of them. You see, when the standard is very low, like it was at my school, it's actually quite easy to look impressive. Do you know what? It's actually quite easy to look impressive if you go to our table tennis club, isn't it? Compared to this criminal, it is very easy for you and me to look good. But next to God and his perfection, there is nowhere to hide. His standard exposes all of us. It exposes all of us. Someone has written, we will make no spiritual progress. We will make no spiritual progress until we look within and take responsibility for what we find within. And that's what this man does. He realizes he's a sinner. But secondly, he recognized who Jesus was. He recognized that the sign that was hanging above Jesus, this is the King of the Jews, which was put there as a joke. He recognizes that it's actually true. He recognizes that Jesus was good in a way that he simply wasn't. This man has done nothing wrong, he says to his friend. He recognized what no one else that day seemed to be able to see, that hanging on the cross, he was actually in the presence of greatness. Do you know, the story goes that on New Year's Day 1962, some of you can remember that, can't you? Four scruffy lads with guitars recorded a demo tape and they gave it to Decca Records. Decca turned it down, saying guitar bands are on the way out. George Martin was another producer at another record company called EMI. He heard the same demo tape and he signed those boys up on the spot. And as they say, the rest is history. Since that day, the Beatles have become the most successful band in all history. Decca's decision cost them millions. It cost them absolutely millions, all because they were in the presence of greatness and they did not recognize it. Just think who was there that day. Do you know what? You can go home, you can read it. We're told the people were there that day. We're told the rulers were there that day. We're told the soldiers were there. We're told the two criminals, but none of them recognized the king on the cross except the one guy hanging next to him. He realizes his sin. He recognizes the king. And then verse 42, he says those words. Remember me. Remember me. Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. I want you to understand, please, what that word remember means. It's not just that this man wants Jesus to think about him a bit later when he's in his kingdom. It's not that. He wants Jesus to act for him. So, if I say to my children in the run-up to Mothering Sunday, okay, if I say to my children, now do remember it's Mother's Day on Sunday, I don't mean don't forget it's Mother's Day, do I? I mean do something. Make your mother a card. Make her a present. Do something. Don't just remember it, do something. And this criminal, when he says, remember me, he's saying, Jesus, when you reach your kingdom, please act for me. I don't deserve anything. I can't make any excuses for my life. I'm just asking you, please, to welcome me when you come into your kingdom. You know, can I say, dear friends, that is what faith is. So many of us think that faith is where I produce a great long list of the wonderful things that I have done for God, and I say, remember me, Jesus, look at what I've done for you. Or lots of us think, remember me, Jesus, I know I'm not perfect, but I'm better than him and her and him and her and her. That's not faith. That's not faith. This guy on the cross can offer absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. All he can do is ask and trust, remember me, Jesus. He is a useless, violent, God-forsaken criminal. He is the baddest of the bad. Just think for a minute, please, just think. What would you have said to him if he had said, please, remember me? What would you have said? You're a criminal. You've got to be joking. Get lost. No way. Or maybe you would have said, sorry, you really haven't been good enough. Oh, whoops, you haven't actually been good at all, have you? Or maybe, this is what we would have said. We would have said something like, to be honest, it's a bit late now, isn't it? It's a bit late now. I tell you what, you go away and do a load of good stuff to prove your deathbed conversion, and then we'll talk. Oh, no, you can't do that, can you? Because you're dying. It's too late. You've got to see, it's too late for this man to do anything apart from plead. But not God. This is fantastic. Verse 43. This is you. This is you and me, if you want it to be. Verse 43. No ifs, no buts, no conditions, no qualifications, no delays. Jesus says to him, truly I tell you, today you will be with me. And today you with me in paradise. That's what Jesus says to this God-forsaken criminal. You see, please understand. This is so important. God did not hang on a cross so that you could earn eternal life. What would be the point of him doing that? What would be the point of him hanging on a cross, going through all of that so that you could earn it? He does not say earn it. He says, I must give it to you. I must give it to you. He is the God of second chances. He is the God of last chances. He is the God of only chances for all of us, for every single one of us. If you think you're the exception, please don't. But you say to me, where's the justice in this? How can it be right that this man, let's pretend he was a murderer. What about if he'd been a multiple murderer hanging on? How can it be fair that he gets away with it? How can it be right that he gets paradise? He hasn't. It's just not fair. Yeah? It's a good question, isn't it? Well, all I can do is repeat the story I told at Rob's funeral, isn't it? About the man who cycled around central London for 14 years and he never wore a cycle helmet. Okay? And then he gets married. And his wife, as wives do, she says, oh, look, please, please, will you wear a cycle helmet? And then, of course, about a year after he's married, he's going along on his bike. And he comes to a drain and his front wheel gets stuck in the drain. And he goes right over the handlebars and he smashes his head on the road. And his helmet is completely shattered. Do you know, there are about 100 people every year in the UK killed in cycle accidents, and 60 out of the 100 die from head injuries. And that man is adamant that if he'd not been wearing a helmet that day, he would have been one of those 60, but the helmet did what it's meant to do. It shattered. He was completely unharmed. That's what a helmet does. The helmet, the cycle helmet, it absorbs the impact of the crash. But in order to absorb the impact of the crash, the helmet must shatter. It must shatter. And in a very small way, it's a picture of how Jesus, with justice, can welcome this man into his kingdom. You see, my sin deserves punishment. That man's sin deserved punishment. But on the cross, 2,000 years ago, Jesus, God himself, he took the full impact of that punishment on himself. He was shattered so I can be saved. He was shattered so that man on the cross can be forgiven. And you see, this is the wonderful thing. A just God will not exact two payments for the same sin. If Jesus has already paid the penalty, a just God cannot exact the penalty again. It just wouldn't be fair. The God we see on the cross, he doesn't just tell us to put on a helmet that will protect us from the impact of his judgment. He doesn't just provide the helmet. Jesus is the helmet. Jesus is the helmet who takes the blow, who takes the impact in our place. So what is a person like that criminal doing in paradise? What's he doing there? Three words. He realized his need. He recognized the king. And he does the only thing he can do. He asks the king to remember him. You know, there were so many people there that day. There were lots of people there all around the cross. And here's the scary thing. It is possible, friends, please listen. It is possible to see everything and to see nothing at all. It is possible to see it all and to see nothing. Kingsley Amis, okay? He was a famous writer, atheist, and just before he died, he gave an interview to the newspaper, and this is what he said. He said, "One of Christianity's great advantages is that it offers an explanation for sin. I haven't got one. I carry my sins around with me," he said. "There's nobody to forgive them. There's nobody to forgive them." You see, Kingsley Amis, he'd thought about it all, he had seen it all. But he stayed a spectator as Jesus offered him the one thing he wanted. You see, through Jesus' death, the curtain is open. The way to God is open. But the spectator, he sees it all and he walks away from the cross unchanged. Do you know, I really want to plead with you this Easter, don't do that. Do not walk away from the cross unchanged. You need to be humble enough to imitate a useless, godless, God-forsaken, violent criminal. Three R's. Realize, recognize, and remember. And when you do, that promise is yours. Truly, today you will be with me in paradise. I want to finish by borrowing some words from Andrew Heard. Andrew Heard is the minister, pastor of a huge church in New South Wales. Because I want these things that we've talked, I want to just tell you, these things we've talked about this morning are deeply, deeply important. The things we've talked about this morning are the things that create clarity in life. And they are things that are meant to be our priority. The reality of heaven and hell. There is a judgment to come. What will I do with my sin? Because there are only two choices. Either I deal with my sin or Jesus deals with it. The fact of the cross, the cost which it cost God to save people. The brevity of life. Jesus died, what was he, 33 years old. Life is short. It matters what we do with our lives. And then there's love. The DVD said it, didn't it? This is how we know what love is. Jesus laid down his life for us. So I want to say, where is our love for the lost? Jesus' compassion took him to the cross for lost sinners.
You know, I want to say, these are the things that give clarity. These are the things that matter. These, as long as I have another breath in me, I will declare, should be our priority as a church. Everything else is secondary, friends. This is what we're about. Clarity and priority. Do speak to me afterwards, but please, let's see what really matters this Easter. Amen.